You know, towards the end of the year, I start to get sort of introspective and start to reflect on the year that's passed and sort of what's happened to me. And I don't know about you, but 2015 was a rough one. It was a rough ride. Ooh, that was hard to say. I had some loss. I had some pain. Particularly this holiday season was really rough. I had some things I had to learn to let go of throughout the course of this year. And so my message today, I want to focus on the things that I was able to glean from the scriptures about the process of letting go, what that looks like, and how to do that. This past Christmas, and I'm sure many of you can relate to this, this past, not even Christmas, but Thanksgiving, I had to let go of the idea of family. That was really hard. My entire life, from when I can remember, my family has gotten together in these huge, huge family gatherings around the holiday. I mean, food galore, family galore, music, singing, just joyfulness, fellowship, togetherness. But over the years, even distance didn't stop us. We would travel hours to see each other, pay high prices for plane tickets. But when I decided to marry a woman and divorce the man I was living with, and by the way, that was married with, and by the way, I divorced him, not because he was a man, but because that relationship was no longer functional and healthy and good. And it was years later, and I married the love of my life, Shelly. Hey, girl. She's so fine. But my family didn't celebrate that with me. They didn't even tolerate it with me. I was utterly, immediately rejected from my family. I was immediately cut off. And when I tell you the pain that that caused me, it's really hard. I didn't tell this story the first service because I didn't think I could get through the service. But if I cry in front of y'all, you'll forgive me, right?
Amen. Amen.
But it cut me to my core. And every year I find myself thinking, maybe this will be the year. This will be the year that they understand gay rights have been legalized. And maybe they'll understand our president stood up for gay rights. Maybe they'll understand. There have been people who challenge theology. Maybe this is the year that they say, you know what? We made a mistake. Come on, girl. We still love you. But every year, I didn't even get a phone call this year. I didn't get a Merry Christmas, Happy Thanksgiving, how you doing? They just cut me off. And to make matters worse, I found out through Facebook that they are still having these huge get-togethers. And I see pictures of it everywhere, all over Facebook, with hashtag family love, hashtag good times, hashtag where's Lynette? That cut me. And I was holding on to that. Every year I hold on to the hope that maybe you'll want me back. Maybe you want me to be part of your family again. Maybe you'll still love me. And this year I realized I had to let go. They are who they are, and I am who I am. And I'm proud of who I am. And if they can't not just tolerate my family and my wife, but celebrate it, then that's not where I want to be. And I had to learn to let go. So I want to talk to you guys today about letting go. And one of the first stories I went to just glean some insight and some good counsel was the story of Abram, which is also Abraham. Abram means the father of the exalted father, and Abraham means the father of many. God just changed Abram's name in Genesis 17. Same guy, same dude. The Lord said to Abram, leave your country, leave your people, leave your father's household, and go to the land I'll show you. So God's not even telling Abram, go here. Here's a map. I want you to go over here. God said, I'll show you when you leave. I'll make you into a great nation. I'll bless you. I will make your name great. Not that you'll be famous like great, like I'm so cool, but people will know that I'm the Lord through you. That's what that means. And you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, meaning people will help you along your journey. I will curse you. I will curse those who curse you. That means people will curse you and be a stumbling block along your journey. And all peoples on the earth will be blessed through you. And here's the part that got me. So Abram left. Three words. So Abram left. Abram didn't stall. Abram didn't bargain. Abram didn't come up with his own plan and say, hey, how about we try this first? Abram left. As the Lord had told him, Lot, his nephew, went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he set out. 75 years old. So the first lesson I learned was to be obedient. I don't know about you, when I hear that word obey, obedient, I get kind of twitchy. I don't really like it. I'm sort of a rebel. I don't like to follow the rules. I like to be outside the box.
Amen.
Amen. So when I hear obey, I'm like, whoa, whoa. It has such a negative connotation to me that I struggle with understanding what that means in the context of obeying God. Obey in its most general meaning is to comply with an order, to submit or yield to a superior authority. The difference is obeying with God is obeying under choice, not obligation. It's a choice. We have to learn to listen to and radically follow the promptings of God. God never forces us to do anything. We have free will from beginning to end. We have free will. God never forces us, but God does imply prompt, press. Anybody been pressed on? Abram listened to, heard that call from God, and then radically followed that. The only way that Abram could radically follow that is that Abram understood the difference between a surrender and a slavery mindset. Surrender is, I freely offer this up to you, saying, I have no clue what I'm doing with this. Take it. Slavery is, I'm forcing you to do this. You have no choice. You have no say-so. And more than likely, it will benefit the superior force and not you. The difference is, with a surrender mindset, when we freely offer it up, joyfully, intentionally offer that up, it benefits us. It benefits us.
Amen.
God is not into making enslaving. God is not into making slaves. God is wanting to entrust you, to empower you, to embolden you, to direct you, to guide you, to help you, to support you. God is not trying to enslave or hurt, maim you. But that does not mean it will be painless. Do it anyway. Obedience will not be painless. Do it anyway. I will tell you something. Disobedience is always painful. Every single time. Always. I have known for a year. Okay. I've known for over a year that I should quit my job. I have not. Let me tell you something. Going to work is painful. It is painful. And they haven't changed. I have. They haven't done anything different. There's nothing wrong with my job. It's a great job. It's a great people. You know, every job has its ups and downs and ins and out. Every job has that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about me being outside of God's radical direction, radical promptings. I'm talking about me staying over here when God's saying, you go over there. And I'm going, well, I don't really know what's over there, so I'm good. I see what's going on over here. I think I'm going to stay here. I've known for over a year. So every morning when I get up, I'm going to tell you, it's an act of Congress to get me out of bed. I'm in the car. I'm driving below the speed limit. And I have a lead foot. One time, I got to work. This is so embarrassing. I got to work, and I had one leg in the car and one leg out the car. And I was just sitting there, just praying. God, get me out the car. I need to get to work. I'm like 10 minutes late, and I don't care. I'm just struggling. And this is just not me. This is the person that shows up 20 minutes early. And I'm super prepared. And so I am struggling. And it's summertime. It's nice. And birds are out. And I'm just like, I don't want to go in this building. And all of a sudden, I didn't get that prayer out of my mouth quick enough when I said, God, help me get out this car and get into my job. A bee comes zooming into my car. And if anybody knows me, I revert to a two-year-old when bees are around. I screamed. I ran out the car. That happened real quick. And then almost as if God was saying, ha-ha, that was me, the bee landed on my Bible that was in the car and did a little dance. Back around and then flew out. I just shut the door and said, that's not funny. That wasn't funny. I did laugh. I laughed. You're right. Sometimes things don't make sense. Do it anyway. It doesn't make sense for me to quit my job. It doesn't make sense. I don't understand how the finances will work, but I know that God is telling me, I have something else for you. It doesn't make sense to do things that seem like they will be to your demise. Do it anyway. Sometimes our way looks better. Don't do that. Don't do that. I've known for a long time what the right thing is. And I'm telling you, I'm suffering for a whole year in disobedience. 1 Corinthians 12 says, for now, in this time of imperfection, we see in a mirror dimly, a blurred reflection, a riddle, an enigma, a puzzle, face to face. Now I know in part, just in fragments, but then I will know fully, just as I have been fully known by God. So in this life, we know in parts. We have pieces of the puzzle. That's why things don't make sense to us. We don't see everything. So your own ability to reason is already flawed. Then when we cross from one world to another, we will see fully. We will see wholly. But while we're in this world, we need to understand we see in part. And because we see in part, we have to trust that when God prompts us to do something, to let go, to relinquish control, that God knows better than we do. The next story that I was able to get some good counsel from was the story of Peter walking on water. In most of the Bibles and the versions, it says, Jesus walks on water. I think it should be called Peter tried to walk on water, because that's exactly what happened. So let me set the scene for you. It's right after the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000. Jesus asked to be alone. He tells his 12 disciples, look, go get in the boat, go across the Sea of Galilee, which is about approximately 4 miles wide, to the other side of Capernaum. I'll meet you over there. Okay, there was no boat. There was only one boat. But he tells the 12 of them, you get in this boat. I'll meet you over there. They get in the boat. They row. All night, they're struggling. It's a storm. They've got about 3/4 of the way in, and they are tired. The boat is waterlogged. They are frustrated. It's cold. It's dark. And in the fourth watch of the night, 3 to 6 a.m., Jesus came to them walking on the sea. Let's just stop right there. There are 12 grown men in a boat, and it took them all night to row a little bit past halfway. And Jesus comes walking and meets them. When the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and said, it's a ghost. And they cried out in fear. But immediately he spoke to them saying, take courage. It's me. Don't be scared. Peter replied to him, Lord, if it's really you, command me to come over to you on the water. I have no idea what Peter was thinking just then. What would make Peter say, if it's you, tell me to walk on water? But before I condemn Peter so much, I did the same thing. I asked God, God, is this you calling me? Is this you calling me to a life of ministry? God said, yeah, go give a sermon. What? Wait a minute. So he said, come. Peter gets out of the boat, walked on water, and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the effects of the wind, he was frightened, began to sink, and cried out, Lord, save me. Immediately, Jesus extended his hand and caught him, saying, oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? And when they got back into the boat, the wind ceased. Notice, when they got back in the boat, the wind ceased. Jesus didn't stop it right then, but he helped Peter through the storm. Then those in the boat worshiped him with awe-inspired reverence, saying, truly, you are the Son of God. So in my process of figuring, God, how do I let go of the boat? How do I walk on water? I learned from Peter, be fearless. Be fearless. Fear is just an emotion. Fear is not real. It's a strong emotion to the anticipation of or awareness of danger. But it is just an emotion. It is not real. Don't get me wrong. Danger is real. Failure, the opportunity to fail, is real. Fear is a choice. It's a decision. It's an option. It is not the only option. It is not the only decision. Matter of fact, I would venture to say it's probably the worst decision and the most common. One of my favorite quotes comes from a movie. It's about fear. It says, the movie is After Earth. It says, fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. Do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We can be aware that things are dangerous. We can be aware that the winds and the waves are blowing. We don't have to fear that. We don't have to be afraid of that. We don't have to consider it. We don't have to size up our situation so much that we are frozen in fear of things that may or may not exist. Fear has a way of making the very thing you're afraid of happen. Peter feared sinking. What happened? He sank. I have a friend who's a social worker, and she goes to people's homes to visit with them and help them with all kinds of things. And one day she went into a client's home, and she was there to help the wife, and the husband was there, and she noticed that the husband had a very blue complexion. Blue. And she tried to ignore it. But after a while, curiosity got the best of her, and she finally said, sir, are you okay? You look a little blue. And he said, well, it's a long story. She said, I've got time. He said, well, I have a fear of parasites. And so I looked on the internet and saw that silver is a natural microbial, a natural antibiotic against parasites. So I started taking it. Silver has an anaerobic effect on the body. It depletes it of oxygen, hence the blue color. You know what else silver does? It suppresses the immune system. So he took so much silver, he suppressed his immune system, and as a result, got parasites. His own fear came to fruition because he couldn't handle what was in his mind. So in learning to be fearless, we have to do something called going beyond bravery. Bravery is awesome. Bravery is when you're afraid of something and you proceed forward anyway. I'm afraid to do this, but I'm going to keep pressing. Bravery is good. Courage is good. Fearlessness is beyond that. Fearlessness is when you don't even entertain the emotion of fear. Bravery was when Peter got out the boat. That was brave. He was scared, but he proceeded. He went out. Fearlessness is if I were to see my child in the street and I know that they are in danger and I go straight for them. It's not that I don't see the cars. It's not that I don't see the potential for me to get hurt. I just don't fear it. I love my child enough to go after them. And I don't let the idea of danger consume me so much that I'm frozen. I'm encouraging you. Get a relationship with the Lord and love God so much that you pursue God despite what the danger may be. Be fearless. And it's a process. Being fearless or learning to be fearless is, I bet it's a lifelong process. Anybody know the name Bethany Hamilton? She is a surfer. 13 years old, she was out on her surfboard, was bit by a shark, severed her arm. 13 years old to be a survivor of a shark attack. I can't imagine. She goes back, never got a prosthetic. You know what she does? She goes back to surfing. She got back on that board. Not only did she go back out there, she went out there again and again and again and again. She entered tournament after tournament after tournament. She became the best one-arm surfer ever. Best two-arm. She won so many tournaments. And you know what? I bet the first time she went out there, she was scared to death. The first time she went out there, she was being brave. The first time she went out there, she thought to herself, I'm scared, but I've got to keep going. This is what I love to do, and I can't stop. But I bet now she goes out there and it doesn't even cross her mind. She's fearless. It's a process. And then in that process, scary things will happen when we relinquish control to God. Do it anyway. In the process of letting go, God never promises us that everything will be okay. Roses and flowers. Nothing will ever happen. You'll get through this scot-free. As a matter of fact, God pretty much tells us, like he told Abram, people will bless you. People will curse you. I'll be there either way. There will be stumbling blocks. There will be pain. I'll be there either way. Either way. You will fall. You will falter. You will fail. I will catch you anyway. It will not be painless, but it will be purposeful. Amen. And then the last piece of this is Peter's universal fear. Peter's fear is the fear that nobody really ever wants to say out loud. Peter's fear is, God, you're going to leave me hanging. I'm going to give it to you, and I'll get hurt. I'll let go of this, and it'll be the end of me. You won't be there for me. Everybody else I've ever loved and been with let me down. You will too. But let me tell you, Peter sank. Jesus caught him. Peter doubted. Peter was fearful. Jesus stood right there, within arm's length, never far away. Even though Peter couldn't perceive it, the winds and the waves and the storm around him prevented him from seeing how close God is. But Jesus was right there. And let me tell you, Jesus is right there. Right there. I know things are blowing around in your life. I know you're hurting. God is right there. Right there. The next thing I learned from Peter was to be faithful. This I struggle with. Not faithful in the idea of I believe there's a God or there's not. And that's okay. People struggle with that too. And that's okay. But the idea of doubt, it's like a poison. It only takes a little bit of it. Doubt means to vacillate, to go between, to teeter, to waver. I believe you're God and you can do everything, but I'm not sure you can do it in this situation. I believe you are the one and only God, but this money sure does meet all my needs. I believe, God, you can save anybody in any situation except me in this one. God, you can heal anybody of anything except me in this addiction. It's to doubt, to waver, to teeter, to go back and forth, to be on the fence. Doubt. Hebrews defines the opposite of doubt as faith, which is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we don't see. Being sure of what we hope for and certain of what you don't see. Being sure of what you hope for and certain of what you can't even see. Faith. Faith and doubt cannot coexist. You cannot have faith and doubt in your heart. If you have faith, you have faith. If you have doubt, you have doubt. So then the question would be, why do you doubt? Because let's be honest, all of us have doubted. Who hasn't doubted? I mean, I think that's why these stories are in the Bible, so that we can glean information from that, so we can get good counsel on that and what to do when doubt arises in our heart. So who hasn't doubted? The key is to get down to why you doubt. What happened in your life that you doubt that God will help you when you need to let go? What happened? Why do you doubt the authority of God? Why do you doubt that God will do for you what you need done? Why do you doubt? In your private time, I encourage you to ask those questions and get that up in your spirit so that you can remove that doubt and fill it with faith. Learning to be faithful is a process, just like learning to be fearless. Put it in God's hands and leave it there. Put it in God's hands and then leave it there. My wife Shelley's parents used to have this argument or debate where her mother would be frantically worried about something. And her father was kind of a really kind of laid back kind of guy, never really worried. And they'd pray about something, and her father would be laid back and okay. And her mother would be, oh, just really stressed out about this. And one day she asked her father, how could you be so calm about this? How can you be so calm? And her father said, because I gave it to God and left it there. You keep taking it back. Don't doubt the authority of God because things don't go the way you planned it. Let me tell you something. It will never go the way you planned it. That's why you're not in control. Amen. I'm just saying. And when you do doubt, please know that your doubt does not impact God's authority. Peter doubted, so he sank. Jesus was still on the water. Peter was scared and full of fear, so he sank. But Jesus, he was good. Need some help? In Peter's sinking, Jesus reached out, grabbed his hand, pulled him up. Why did you have doubt? Why did you waver? I bet some of us here are in over our heads. I bet some of us here are sinking. I bet some of us here are filled with doubt, fear. worry. I bet some of us here, I bet a lot of us here, me included, have things that we need to let go of. Things that we need to release to God. It could be an attitude. It could be plans for your future. As a parent, it could be your kids. It's scary. You could be dealing with something in school. I invite you today to make an intentional, willful, joyful surrender to God. Everyone should have a note card and a pen. If you didn't get one, raise your hands and the ushers will bring one to you. We have a few up front here. Yeah. On this card, I want you to put down, we have one up here. Mm-hmm. On your card, I want you to put down what you know you hear the Lord speaking to you in your heart to let go of. Throughout this whole time today, in our time together, you felt that prompting in your spirit. Don't ignore that. Radically follow that. Radically follow that. Intentionally, willfully today, write down what that is. Don't put your name on it. Don't put your name on it. Fold that up. I have baskets here in the front. I would like you to prayerfully, intentionally, come forward and place them in the basket as an act of letting it go. Don't walk out here the same way you walked in. Release that. It's not yours to carry anymore. It's not yours to carry anymore.